It's just not going to accomplish anything.
I totally agree.
Is there a bell that goes off or do you start?
Yes, sir. There is a bell.
Does this store, you guys normally close the store for this class or leave it open?
We do. You got a pen?
Yes.
You got a pen?
They're on their way.
What was that?
You got to write out. Hammer down.
For what?
Attendance.
Oh. Where do I get it?
On a little piece of yellow piece of paper.
Oh, okay.
Are your brothers on their way?
They're on their way.
They get lost?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess.
They're prophets.
All right. As we get started in this, Lawson, would you mind opening us up in the word?
Yeah. Dear Lord, Father, who art in heaven, thank you so much for this day and the opportunity to come together and learn and worship another portion of your word. We just ask you, dear Lord, that you would help us center our minds and our hearts upon you and let us forget all those worldly things, those troubles from work, family, anything that may be going on in our lives, and help us focus solely on you. We are so thankful for the blessings you've given us, and we ask you, dear God, to please help us be good stewards of those blessings and help us live a life like Jesus, and forgive us for our many sins, and let us live in heaven with you one day. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
All right, so the title, grab the material on that back chair there.
And add your number to the number.
Okay, so the title of these classes is Modern Challenges. And I'm going to propose two different approaches that we can take to these classes in just a moment. Make sure you grab the material. Yeah, okay, cool. What would you guys say to this question? What are some of the modern challenges that Christians face that maybe Christians in a previous generation didn't face?
Technology.
Okay, technology. What else?
Technology, just kind of information being ready and readily available.
Okay, good. So like
a good and bad thing.
Okay, very good. Good. What else?
Societal norms.
Societal norms getting worse. Yeah, okay. What else?
Approaches to truth.
What was that?
Approaches to truth.
Approaches to truth, like your truth is your truth, my truth is my truth. So like relativism, that kind of thing. Okay. What else? Anybody feel a little overwhelmed with the rise of secularism and how to navigate and how to think through? So I came from a secular family. I did not grow up learning the Bible. We grew up learning that it was kind of a silly thing. And so ever since becoming a Christian, I've been a lot more comfortable studying with skeptics and atheists than any other group of people. And so I've done a lot of studying in Atlanta, especially with skeptics and atheists. And I want to explain the approach that we're going to take. So here, there's two approaches that we could take to these classes, and I want to get a vote from you guys on how we're going to do this. The first six or seven classes, those are going to be what they are. And tonight I'm going to explain the approach to this in just a moment. The general idea, though, is that Christianity fits your deepest needs. Our society so every year the Oxford English Dictionary puts out a word of the year that is supposed to capture what that year was about. So in 2016, their word was post-truth, post-truth. Anybody know what that means? So post-truth is supposed to mean that we live in a society now where we don't determine what's right or wrong or what we believe based on objective facts and data, but we determine it based on what I feel like resonates with me. So how do you communicate the gospel in a society where people don't really care about facts and objective information? You ever like studied with a skeptic or talked with a skeptic and they say, I don't believe in the Bible, and you say, well, here's my arguments for the existence of God and here's the arguments why the Bible's trustworthy and stuff like that. Does that really fly in our society right now? No, because people don't really care about facts and data. For example, science would only show that there's two genders, But if I feel like there's 78 genders or whatever, then I can do whatever I want. So that's just one easy kind of example. So what we're going to be doing is showing how Christianity makes best sense of our deepest needs. And this is how I start by reasoning with skeptics in our society today. And by the way, you'll see in this material, I quote from a ton of atheists. And so I'm trying to reason with skeptics from where they're at. But this is all going to have benefit for all of us. And you'll see that as we go through this. But what we do is we go through different human needs and compare what secularism has to offer versus Christianity. And as we do that, we're comparing by looking at quotes from atheists and showing them that Christianity's got better resources for the needs that you have, which I think is a good way of reasoning with people in our society today. So we'll walk through that as we go through that. I'll remind ourselves a lot of what we're doing in those classes. But here's the second part of these classes. This is up to you guys. We could either deal with different cultural challenges. So here on this option, I've got technology, social media, substance abuse. There's a lot of interesting things coming out right now about the use of psychedelics in religion. I'm reading a book about that right now. Homosexuality, transgenderism, social justice, women's roles, and then maybe a Q&A for a wrap-up. So that's one option on what we can do.
Can I ask, this is a real deal for me right now. I know a young lady that's got three children, one's adopted, she just had a baby, and her oldest daughter is 7. And right now, she's letting her daughter at age 7 decide how she wants to identify.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a very real problem in my mind.
Yep.
For, I mean, a 7-year-old doesn't even know how to get the same shoes on.
Right.
Get the same pair of shoes on, much less decide how they want to identify sexually.
Right. And these first classes show that any worldview apart from Christianity is going to leave you wanting in all of these basic human needs. So that this first section on cultural challenges, that's option one. Option number two, see what we do here in the second option is we add another human need for forgiveness and then talk about what I like to call objective evidences for Christianity. So I like to call this subjective evidences for Christianity. Like, subjectively, this resonates better than atheism would. But then we can switch to talking about objective evidences for Christianity, but in a more high-level way than maybe you've heard before. Like, what are the arguments for the existence of God, the Bible, Jesus? Did Christianity steal from pagan religions? And then what positive influences has Christianity had on the world as objective ways of trying to defend Christianity? So, between options 1 and 2, what do you guys prefer? Raise your hand if you want option 1.
Now remember, you've got 5 people in here that won't be back.
Right, and I'll bring this up in the next classes, but for those who are going to be in this class, raise your hand if you want option 1. You like option 1? Raise your hand if you want option 2. Alright, so because we've got at least 6 weeks to figure it out, I'm going to bring this up a couple more times when more people are here. But right now I'm feeling more the option 1 kind of lean. But and maybe there'll be a time for, if we don't end up doing this stuff, we can do that at another time as well. Okay, so so here's the purpose of what we're doing in these classes. Number one, I want to show through these classes how Christianity makes better sense of the world than secularism. Or any worldview that maybe you guys have been exposed to and tempted with or something like that. Number two, I want these classes to strengthen our own faith so that in the process of comparing what Christianity teaches with what the world teaches, and as we do this, I think in a more sophisticated way, rather than just saying the world says this and the world says that, I'm actually going to give you the best arguments that the world makes. And we're going to try to deconstruct them together. So we're not going to straw man it. You guys know what it means to straw man something? Where you give a false idea. Okay, good. You guys are raising. Okay, so. And then thirdly, provide tools and confidence for conversations that we can have with people. So for what we're going to introduce a lot of these ideas tonight by doing these three things. Number one, I want to talk about the decline of religion in America. Number two, what are the causes of this skepticism that we see? And then thirdly, what's the path forward for us to do these classes that are that will hopefully lead to conversations that you guys can have with other people and things like that. Okay, so any comments or questions about any of this before we get started here? Okay, so I'm going to show you some statistics that apply to the United States. For since the Enlightenment, how much time do we have? Okay. The Enlightenment, did anybody know what the after effects of the Enlightenment were? Like what it did to the human psyche?
Made it more open.
Made us more open, made us think that human reasoning is the answer to everything, which is where we get humanism from. You guys know what humanism is? That human beings can solve the world's problems. We don't need God. Look at what religion, what science has done. Look at the evils that religion has done, all this kind of stuff. So the idea, the prevailing thought for a long time has been that as science progressed more and more, what would we need less and less of?
God.
And that science would explain away the reasons that people used to need God. So these statistics I'm about to show you are true in America and in the Western world. But do you think religion's on the decline in Africa right now? What about China? It's actually growing super fast in China right now. Even in the Middle East, I've heard some anecdotal stories about Christianity spreading there right now. Okay, so here's some things about the United States. Pew Research, October 2019, had this article that was titled, "In the United States, Decline of Christianity Continues at a Rapid Pace." And in the article, they compared 2009 to 2019. It talks about the religiously unaffiliated. So there's atheist, agnostic, indifferent. Raise your hand if you've known anybody that was a Christian that became one of those. Was anybody in your family or like people that you knew at school or something?
It was someone I knew at school.
Okay, all right. At Western Kentucky here?
No, I grew up here, so back in high school.
High school, okay, all right. All right, my mom and dad would identify more as agnostic. So in 2017, in 2009, they found that 17% of the United States population is religiously unaffiliated. But then in 2019, they did the research again and found that it jumped up to 26%. Recently, Gallup poll, March 2021, found that less than 50% of Americans belong to a church for the first time in United States history. And in the article, it said this: "The decline in church membership is primarily a function of the increasing number of Americans who express no religious preference." Okay, so that's all like, oh, really scary and all that kind of stuff. What do you guys think the reason for this is?
Well, there was a pandemic, so...
Yeah, okay, so the pandemic would have something to do with that. And this March of 2021 is in the middle of that. What do you think is the cause for this increase in being religiously unaffiliated? Yeah.
Just one major reason I see is a lot of people kind of become jaded to the idea of church because they see a lot of problems pop up with it and how humans do church as opposed to how the Bible says to do church.
Okay, good. So there's religious frustration, McCord?
Parents not teaching the kids.
Okay, good. What else? Do you have something, Miranda?
Oh, no, but I think some of it is that churches don't really people please as much as they would. Individuals like it.
Okay, so people don't feel loved, or people don't...
Yeah, and like people are questioning the Pope of like homosexual rights, and he's like, I don't know, so...
Yeah, okay, good. Now let me ask this question. What do you think the skeptic would say? So put on your atheist hat for a moment and answer the question, why is religion declining in the United States? What do you got?
More science coming out.
Good.
Explain things.
Yeah, so we got the science thing. It's explaining more and more stuff. Let's say that you're an atheist. Why do Christians believe in the Bible? What reasons do they have to believe?
Well, it depends. There's different types of atheists. There's the militant atheist who's like, they're stupid. There's the more scientific that just says they're just not, they don't have as much knowledge as we have been exposed to, so to speak.
Okay, good.
And then there's the feeling atheist, where it's just a feeling kind of thing. And then there's the atheist that was affected by personal issues, and so it's more of a personal thing for them.
Okay, McCord.
I've heard that they say that people that follow a religion just to make them feel better about
right.
different stuff.
Yeah, good. So, in other words, Christians have emotional reasons for their belief. Like, you can't stand the thought of not being with grandma forever and she died and all this sort of... So you Christians, you guys have emotional reasons for your belief. But me, Mr. Atheist, I've got objective reasons for my belief in the things that I believe in. I've got higher education. I'll never forget whenever I was in eighth grade, my friend had a bar graph that showed that the more educated you were, the less likely you were to believe in religion. And we all laughed at that and decided that Christians were a bunch of idiots. There's another interpretation to that that we'll get to in just a little bit. But have you guys ever heard of Richard Dawkins? He's the famous atheist guy. So he has a new book called Outgrowing God. And in that book, he said this. Outside Western Europe, where only a minority nowadays are religious, most people around the world still do believe in God or gods, especially if they aren't well-educated in science. How many of you have taken science classes in college? All right, if you want to believe in God and speak out loud about that in those classes, how are you going to be treated?
Not well.
Do you suppose that if I want to get into higher education and all these different classes where the only way I can fit in is by not believing in God, do you suppose that there's ever peer pressure involved in getting rid of your faith?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I heard from this one guy who was kind of doing something similar, sort of a study on different beliefs. I don't know if he took it or if he had a friend took it, but he said that, you know, the more into the science course that you go, the more you are pressured to not believe in God. And I'm not sure if this was an opinion or something his friend noticed, but a lot of people kind of fake it and just don't identify because they don't want to deal with the, I'll go with the term scientific outcast.
Right, right. I remember being in college, and I graduated in 2012, and in 2011, like, it was just brutal in my classes, and I didn't go to any kind of religious school or anything. I wanted to try to go to FC, but my mom and dad were going to kill me, so. That's what skeptics oftentimes say. We are the ones who are educated, you guys are the ones that are stupid, you guys have emotional reasons for belief, but if you try to think about it, what are the actual reasons for skepticism, though? I'm going to just run through several of them. Number one is justification for sin. Now, Aldous Huxley was, I think he was a British atheist, and he wrote a lot about psychedelic drugs and how those things open you up to not needing God and things like this. But he wrote this, "For myself, as no doubt for most of my contemporaries, the philosophy of meaninglessness." Now, let me just stop here for a moment. What do you think he means by the philosophy of meaninglessness?
Nothing matters.
Nothing matters. There's no moral consequence, anything. "This philosophy was essentially an instrument of liberation. The liberation we desired was simultaneously liberation from a certain political and economic system and liberation from a certain system of morality. We objected to the morality because it interfered with our sexual freedom." Okay, so here he's attracted to this idea that there's ultimately nothing we have to answer to. There's no God that we have to answer to. So there's a sense in which, objectively speaking, for him, the world was meaningless. Why was that philosophy attractive to Aldous Huxley?
Because he wanted sexual freedom.
Yeah, sexual freedom. Like, I don't have to feel guilty for the things that I do sexually and stuff like that. And if I can get rid of these ideas of religion and all these things, then I just don't have to feel guilty anymore. So, by the way, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 2 gives the same reason in the Bible, "And many will follow their sensuality, and because of them the way of the truth will be blasphemed." So it talks about people following their sensuality and the things that they're teaching are not right, stuff like that. Okay, so that's reason number one, justification for sin. Do you guys have any comments or questions on that one?
Yeah. And it makes you sound intellectual.
Yes, it sounds very intellectual the way that he's saying all of this.
Yeah.
I find that whenever I've studied with skeptics who've got like, well, here's the problem of thermodynamics and blah, blah, and like, oh, there's no evidence for the Exodus and blah, 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 blah. The question that I like to ask skeptics that I study with is, I'll go, we can talk about all the reasons to believe in the Bible and all the reasons to believe in God, we'll go ahead and have those conversations. But is there anything that the Bible teaches you to not do that you want to do? And I'll say 75% of the time that's where the real conversation is. And then all these other things sound really sophisticated and stuff, but it's actually a lot more shallow than it would appear. So, okay, so that's number one, justification for sin. Number two is a bad religious experience. This could be you grew up with hypocritical Christian parents, the church you attended growing up had problems, or there's something that you read in the Bible that you have some kind of distaste over. And so bad religious experience, I think, is a big one. Whenever I studied with skeptics in Atlanta, we'd all meet up, and we'd go around the table, and I'd say, all right, tell me what you identify as. And I'd begin by saying, I'm Eric, and I'm a Christian. And then there's a guy named Ashkan, who had a Muslim background, but he was a secular humanist. And then there was Avery, who was a straight-up atheist. And then we just go around the circle. And my second question to them was, tell me about your religious background. And all the ones that, like, whenever we talked about what we identified in, it was very calm and collected. And then, tell me your religious background. Hypocritical parents. Bad church. Like, that's where the emotions would start to come out. And so, by the way, should we be sympathetic to this? Do you think there's people that legitimately have bad religious experiences in the church? For sure. And so I think we've got to be thoughtful about how we respond to people in that situation. But it's like, how do you not throw the baby out with the bathwater? And how do you disassociate what the Bible says with what these things are that I always associated with the Bible? I don't know how to work through that because I didn't grow up in a Christian family. But if I grew up where it was like, okay, I have to untangle these things and just look at what the Bible says as opposed to my parents who were jerk hypocrites or whatever, that I can imagine that would be pretty difficult. But that's a big reason why people that I've studied with are not believers in God, at least. Any comments or questions?
Well, I was just going to say, I think the reason that's important to really understand is because you just pointed it out, because of the emotion associated with the bad experience,
yes.
It makes it so hard because that's imprinted on us in a very deep way.
Yep.
Many times.
Yes.
And so to get them to get to the truth and pass the emotion is sometimes difficult.
Well, there's a girl that I know in California who, when I was preaching in California, we first moved there, I think she was 14, and she's 22 now, and we text every now and then. Her dad always thought she was smoking marijuana. Just like, just randomly, like, are you smoking marijuana? Like, just as if this was the biggest deal in his life towards her. And not that you should do that, obviously, but like, and her dad's a deacon in the church and everything, and like, led songs a lot. And so she has this hard time disassociating my dad with what the Bible teaches. And she's 22 now, and she's not become a Christian yet. She's had a very bad religious experience. It can happen in churches of Christ, whatever. Here's another one. Cultural background beliefs. Now, Charles Taylor is a Canadian philosopher. He's coming from a Christian worldview. I'm not saying he is a Christian. I'm saying he's coming from a Christian worldview. And Charles Taylor, he's got this really big book called A Secular Age. And look at this quote that he said in it. What stopped people, that is almost everybody, from being able to adopt stances of unbelief in 1500? One answer is the enchanted world. In a cosmos of spirits and forces, some of them evil and destructive, one had to be told, one had to hold on to whatever was conceived to be the mainstay of good power, our bulwark against evil. Another answer was that belief was so interwoven with social life that one was hardly conceivable without the other. Okay. So he poses this question. Why is it the case that if you lived in the 1500s, there's no way that you were going to be an unbeliever? What's the reason?
Because you didn't have science and you didn't know how to explain the world.
Yeah, so you had those things. What else?
And then also, if you were not Christian, then you wouldn't have a social life.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any kind of social life. What else?
Well, that was just the culture. That was the norm back then. It was, and
Yeah, and he talks about the enchanted world. Everybody believed if you had a cold, what was responsible for the cold? Evil spirits or your sin, like the evil spirits attacking you because of your sin or whatever. So, like, it was just kind of like in daily conversation, oh, that person's got a little demon because they got COVID or, you know, whatever. And not that they had that back then. But,
a little while after the Black Plague.
Yeah, all those different sorts of things. And so, so if your society says that unbelief is just, you can't do that. What are some of the cultural background beliefs we have today that would allow unbelief to be more common? And let me just say it this way. This is peer pressure, right? Okay, so what are the beliefs today that make it more easy to be a skeptic?
Emphasis on choice.
Be your true self.
Be true to yourself. Like every new Disney movie. Why is it that the parents always die at the beginning of those movies?
I think more exposure to different philosophies and different types of religion. Whereas in 1500, you were kind of just, you could go places, but you couldn't go places, and you didn't have access to.
Right.
You know, it ties on the technology, but I'm going to just use the term options. There are more options present.
And it's like everywhere, like online and stuff. So one thing that somebody told me before I moved to Bowling Green, who used to live here, I said, tell me about Bowling Green. He said, I hated it there. He said the people are very insular in their thinking. Like, they haven't been exposed to big cities. They haven't been exposed to anything outside of this little place. I think that's changed quite a bit since he lived here because everybody's got the internet now and YouTube channels that can be famous no matter what state that you live in and whatever. Let me ask this question then. What appears to be behind these causes of skepticism? Bad religious experience, cultural background beliefs, desire to sin. What appears to be behind these causes of skepticism?
Want.
A desire to rebel.
Desire to rebel, want, what else?
Community.
Self-will. Can we go back to this here? What is it that skeptics say? That you guys believe in God because of what?
Emotion.
Is this emotion?
Yes.
Is this emotion? Is this kind of peer pressure emotion? Okay. So maybe it's kind of a wash. As Christians, do you guys have emotional reasons for believing in God? I do. Do skeptics have emotional reasons for their skepticism?
Yes.
Is it just true that emotions play a part in being a human being, and that's part of what it means to be a human being?
True.
So, but can emotions lead you astray? Yeah, and so we're going to talk about all those things. Can you guys think of any other causes of skepticism, though, that we haven't covered?
No, one is different things going around in the world. People say, like, if all these bad things are happening, where's God to save them?
Right, good. I might put that some kind of bad religious experience or something. Maybe that's a separate topic. Maybe there are some intellectual things that I can't seem to square with what I see in the world with God. Good, what else? Any other reasons why you've talked with people that maybe didn't believe and why?
Confusion or... I mentioned many options, but with many options, there's many questions. There's even more questions.
Yeah, good.
And you know, if you could even look at Christianity itself, you know, with all of the denominations and all of the different paths and historical things that has occurred with the label Christianity.
Right. Standard. That's right. Yeah.
There are genuine questions about, you know, what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah. How do you wade through all the information and the data that's out there and everything? There's zillions of interpretations, stuff like that. All that can be very discouraging. So,
this would tack on to bad religious experiences, but just watching someone who was kind of like a Christian role model fall away.
Yes.
And then just watch that. Just affect in a negative light to where, oh, well, if they didn't do it right, then how can someone else do it right?
Yeah, that's good.
Do you know what? And I'll speak to that one because I experienced that at a later time in my life as an adult. For someone that was a really important role model to me when I was growing up, when I was young, where I didn't have the example of my father in my home as a Christian father as we would like to have. And this individual was one of the people that had impact on me in that regard. And so when that happened and that person fell away, I mean, to the degree that he took his life, you know, it did not affect my faith at all in a negative way, but it really, I got emotionally mad as a result of it. But it did not do anything to compromise my faith.
Yeah.
I just couldn't understand how he could allow that to have impact on his.
Yeah, I've heard stories about like preachers falling away or getting involved in a lot of immorality that the congregation looked up to the guy and whatever. So yeah, that can be a big challenge.
And I guess what I'm trying to say there is that's where we've really got to be grounded in our faith,
for
in
sure.
our relationship with God, to know that it's not put in someone else, but it is in our relationship with Him.
Yeah, good.
But
let me ask this question. Can I definitively, airtightly prove Christianity to be true to you? Like I can prove 2 plus 2 is 4? Can I definitively, airtightly prove to you that secularism or atheism is true? All right, so I can't do either of those things. So what I have to do is a path forward. You have to compare worldviews and see which one makes better sense when you compare. So like, how do you know that Freddy's is better than Culver's until you've gone to both places? Their ice cream is better too. All right, so what we're going to be doing in these first few classes is showing that Christianity makes more emotional sense than secularism. And so I showed the chart earlier about the deepest needs that we have. We all have a need for meaning. We all have a need for identity. We all need to have reasons to be moral. I think you can be an atheist and do morally good things. But your worldview, if you're an atheist, you don't have good reasons to care about your morality. So that's what we're going to talk about in that class. We need to have hope. And you need to have a sense of community, and we could add forgiveness depending on what route we go with these classes. And so when we compare secularism to Christianity, and we look at what atheists have said about trying to find meaning in life, by the way, do atheists have an approach to trying to find meaning in life? They do have an approach to it. And it might be more sophisticated than you thought before if you haven't looked at what they've said about it. Does it ultimately hold up? No, it doesn't. But they've got an approach to all of these things. And we're going to look at what atheists have said about it, like smart atheists, and then deconstruct their quotes together, and then compare it to Christianity. Okay, so here's some questions that are going to help guide us as we go through this. Number one, do your beliefs contradict one another? And one example that I like to bring up with this, with skeptics, with morality, is how many skeptics do you know that are all about social justice? There's a lot, right? How does that stem from their worldview that says we came about from the strong eating the weak? So, we came about from the strong eating the weak, therefore let's love everybody. Does that make sense? I'm glad if you believe in helping people in need, but your worldview has self-contradictions in it. Do you guys see the point with that one? Okay. So do your beliefs contradict one another? Number two, do your human experiences fit your beliefs? We're going to look at a quote when we get to hope of this woman who's gotten rid of her idea of faith in God and stuff. And at the end of the book, her daughter is asking what happened to grandma who died. And she's trying to figure out how to answer her daughter. And she determines, and she doesn't say this out loud to the daughter, but this is what she's thinking, that, you know, when we die, we can be made into ashes that can feed a tree, and then maybe somebody will hang a swing on that tree. Does that sound good? Or somebody can make a baseball bat from it and kill somebody with it. You know, you don't really know. Like, do your human experiences fit your beliefs? If you believe that you're going to feed a tree one day, does that really fly well with somebody that you love who's passing away? Are you going to be okay with that? Number three, do you deny things that you actually live as if you believe? There's no such thing as moral right or wrong, but then you get upset when somebody mistreats somebody over here or whatever. Number four, are you willing to embrace the logical conclusions of your belief? Okay, so we're going to be kind of centering around a lot of those questions by looking at those human needs that we have. Now, let's say that we walk through these different human needs and we go, oh, wow, Christianity's got all the resources for the things that human beings were designed to have. Does that prove Christianity to be true?
Not to a skeptic.
So this stuff is the most powerful to the skeptics I've studied with, but what it does not do is it doesn't still definitively prove Christianity. You haven't looked at the arguments for the existence of God, you haven't looked at the arguments for the reliability of the Bible, but one of the skeptics, him and his wife who were converted, when we went through these things, these are deep questions that they hadn't thought about before. Oh, I'm trying to find my meaning in a secular worldview, and there's no ultimate meaning, and I've never thought about these questions before, and kind of put them into an existential crisis of sorts, so that they were more willing to look at one of the Gospels, and then we studied through the Gospel of Mark, and then they were converted and stuff like that. So what these things do is they remove the emotional barriers to unbelief. And then I think open you up more to, okay, well, what does the Bible say? Does that make sense? And that's why we can either look at the more objective arguments for the existence of God in the Bible and stuff after looking at these classes, or just go to the more cultural struggles that people have. But that's the approach that I take when I study with skeptics. These things remove emotional barriers, and then they're ready for the objective arguments for God because the emotional barriers have been removed. Does that make sense? Okay. Any comments or questions up to this point? All right, and then another thing about a path forward for these classes. I'm going to encourage all of you to be honest about your struggles. I don't know, different churches have different kind of cultures in them. There's some churches where people feel afraid to bring up like questions that they have about something for fear that they're going to be like judged or ostracized or whatever. If there's something that you're struggling with, remember that what's often behind it is an emotional reaction to something. And we might think that we're being really enlightened with all these YouTube things and history channelism and all the whatever. But be honest about where your struggle is coming from. But then number two, have you ever heard people say, you know, I'm really struggling with this question, or I'm really struggling with this thing about God, or I'm really struggling with this? What do people mean when they say that they're struggling with something?
They don't know.
Yeah, they don't know, so they're kind of like being tossed, and how do I have any firm idea of something? And that's a really uncomfortable kind of feeling. What else would somebody mean by this idea of struggling?
They don't want to think about it, so they want the answer.
What do you mean by that?
Like the question is posed to them, but they don't want to know the truth, what they actually feel, so they want somebody to tell them.
Okay, good. Yeah, so they're not really struggling, they're just wanting answers, get like spoon-fed to them. So there's a guy that I studied with, met him at another church in Atlanta, and he fell away. And we talked on the phone a few times because the dad wanted me to talk with him. And he's like, you know, I've always really struggled with how a loving God could allow all the evil and suffering in the world. And I'm really struggling with that question. And so my first question to him was, okay, well, what have you done to try to find the answers to that question? Because that's a good question. What do you think he would have said?
Should have said or did say?
What do you think he did say?
He didn't. He would probably have said, I don't know.
What he said was, oh, I tried talking to an elder at my church like 8 years ago, and he didn't have really good answers to it. Oh, you talked to one elder who happened to grow up in a Christian family and has never struggled with these questions before, and Christianity's been around for 2,000 years, And there's been really good writers and thinkers answering these kinds of questions for 2,000 years, and there's a bunch of books that have been written about it. And so you're struggling, and you've talked to one elder one time who has never wrestled with these questions. Is that what it means to struggle?
Not present tense.
No. When people say, I'm struggling with blah, 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 and you've not even tried reading one book about it, not even one article, not even one blog post about it, you're not struggling. What you're doing is excuse making. Now, I don't mean to be too, like, hardline on the skeptic or the doubter, but don't use that word struggle if you're not actually struggling. To struggle means to wrestle and to try to figure out answers and weigh out what you're reading and studying and thinking through. Does that make sense? Any other final comments or thoughts or questions or musings or antagonisms? Yeah.
Earlier on the questions to help guide us, I also just thought about how good it would be to ask a Christian those questions to kind of help guide them along their process.
Yes. So what we're going to accomplish in these classes, this is not just equipping you guys to go study with atheists. It'll give you a tool for that. But I'm afraid that we as Christians don't stop and think, am I really getting my meaning in life from God? Am I really getting my sense of identity and who I am from God? Do I care about morality because of why the Bible tells me to care about it? We have got so much information coming in at us from so many different directions that I'm just afraid that we as Christians haven't stopped and thought about these things and grounded these things in God more than anything else. So my hope is that we'll accomplish a lot in these classes. Any other comments or thoughts? Yeah.
Just a quick comment for those that are leaving and won't be back. This will be online. It's being recorded.
Oh, it is?
So right there.
Oh, cool.
So you've got the opportunity to go and find it on the website and be able to still listen to these classes.
Yeah.
I think another thing that would cause skepticism is the image of Christianity. Like, I'm presenting that, you know, if you say you're a Christian, for the skeptic, they think that they're identifying with potential negative behaviors that have been done with the label Christianity.
Okay, because I don't think we're going to go with option number two in the classes. Write this book down. The author's name is Tom Holland, and it's not Spider-Man. It's a British guy who's actually, like, really smart. I don't know if the Spider-Man guy is smart or not, but Tom Holland he's an atheist, and he wrote a book called Dominion. He's also written a book about the history of Islam. He's a very good scholar. But he wrote a book called Dominion, and the subtitle is something like How the Western World Was Created by Christianity or something like that. But what he does is every chapter in the book, he goes through some, like, Carthage in 462 AD or some different town since Christianity and some kind of important event that happened in that town because of Christian thinking. Like, do you guys know where hospitals came from? Where the first hospital ever came from?
2 minutes.
From Christian people that were influenced by Christianity. Do you know where, like, in the ancient world, what people used to do with girls that were born because they didn't do ultrasounds? If they found out it was a girl, do you know what they would do with them? The way that they would do abortions back then is they just throw them into a river or throw them on the side of the road until some animal or beast came and killed them. And so Christianity came along, and guess who the people were that were taking care of the aborted babies on the road? Christians were the ones taking care of them. So we live in a world that's been so dynamically influenced by Christianity that in our society today we talk about social justice. Do you realize that social justice was never even an idea before Christianity? Now, do people misuse social justice today in wrong directions? And yeah, blah, blah, blah. But, like, the general idea of caring about people that are in, like, bad situations, where did that idea come from? From Christianity. So go read that book, Dominion, by Tom Holland. He's an atheist, but he's very fair and balanced where he shows this is the contribution that Christian ideology brought to the world. And so that's maybe we'll have time to talk about some of those things as we go through some of these classes. But any of your thoughts or comments on any of this? Does this make sense where we're going in these classes? If we got time...
Bell's going to ring at any minute.
It's going to ring at any minute, okay. So the connection with this option, which is what I...